Pete McMurray in the Skyline Studios. Congressman Mike Quigley represents the 5th District. He is my congressman, and he joins us now. Congressman, how are you, sir?
I'm good. Thank you.
Another historic vote in Washington. Tell us about this.
Well, look, it's a little surreal. You think about the importance of the vote and arguably the most important democracy in the world, and members were walking onto the floor one by one, voting and leaving a different door, for the most part wearing masks and gloves and being called to vote in groups. So there were 6 groups and went by alphabetical order, and you were told that every 10 minutes the next group would be emailed and asked to come to the House floor, and no conversations, just go there, vote, and go back to your office and wait for the next one.
It's just crazy. My cousin Darren LaHood, who was on with John Williams on Friday, voted
sure.
He voted during Group 4. I sent him a text. I told him to wear gloves because you are Group 6.
Well, I appreciate that. Look, and there were people not wearing gloves and masks and crowding into elevators. Same sort of false bravado of folks that are having house parties during this, or just aren't practicing the distancing necessary.
I just don't understand it. I don't understand why people are fighting wearing masks and gloves. Just do it. We'll get through this together. But I wanted to ask you, have you ever seen the government work so fast to pass a bill like this? It has to make you proud of your colleagues.
You know, it does. It's very hard to pass legislation in any legislative body, city council, county, state, federal. But here we passed the first CARES Act, which spent an ungodly amount of money, over $2 trillion. And it was put together, obviously, within a short period of time, 9 days. But in caucus, we were told by some of the world's leading financial and economic experts that every dollar we spend now to help people is worth $4 in a month, because the need is so important,
right?
And you have that economic system fall out from underneath itself. So on a bipartisan basis, and very few exceptions, the members acted responsibly, got this forward. It's a big country. It's a big tent.
Right.
People are going to disagree.
Yep.
And you saw that, and you saw the barbs going back and forth. But in the end, they got it done, the second bill within a month. And I would expect sometime in early or mid-May, we're going to do 4.0. And hopefully, it will include a pretty significant infrastructure package.
Where does the money come from? Are we just borrowing the money now?
Yes.
Okay.
There's no other way to describe it. And I suppose it's akin to the kind of spending you saw during the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
I think we look back at that, and FDR probably saved the country, if not just the economy. And the other thing we remember from the Depression is, at the worst time in our nation's history from an economic point of view, at our lowest point, we still dreamed big and built bigger. We built infrastructure
right
during the Depression that we still use today. And I think there's a lesson to be learned from that, that, it's a horrible crisis, but let's not waste it. If there are things that we can gain from keeping people dutifully employed, housing and food security, but generations to come will use them, let's do it. I mean, look at the infrastructure in Chicago, from the L to school buildings to park district facilities. Many of them are over 100 years old, but they're still important. They're still critical, and obviously they still need maintenance.
Right. We're talking with Congressman Mike Quigley. Let's talk about this infrastructure bill, because I thought this would be the first thing, once President Trump got into office, that everyone would agree on it and they pass it. Here we are, and it's almost the election again. How come it hasn't gone through, and what would be the holdup when you guys vote for the stimulus 4.0?
Now, I thought the president as a candidate was serious, and I think he was, that we need to build big. It was one of the things that President Obama tried to get done and unfortunately couldn't in 8 years. He really pushed it at the end. President Trump began talking about it, and then he said something like, I've learned the Republicans don't want to pay for this. This is more of an investment than just an expenditure. This is like, you know, replacing an appliance, a furnace in your house. A, you have to do it, and B, it's not money that just goes away. It increases the value of your house as it would our economy. Mm-hmm. You know, we're getting outspent by our economic competitors, Europe, India, China, somewhere between 4-1 and 6-1, and we're probably about $3 trillion behind doing basic infrastructure. And I just want folks to imagine what that could mean to Chicago. You know, we had a bridge, a really important bridge, as part of Lakeshore Drive that failed just a short time ago. We have to rebuild the Blue Line. We have schools that are over 100 years old. We have park district facilities in the same age. But, you know, as a country, we need to rebuild the locks on the Mississippi. We need to expand broadband capabilities. There's a lot of green infrastructure we can do. And I'm hoping that we get a plan together pretty soon.
It seems to make sense to me. We're talking with Congressman Mike Quigley. Let's talk about the money in the stimulus package 3.5. How does the emergency funding for the Paycheck Protection Program work with small businesses if they had to lay people off? Do they hire them back? How does that work, and how fast do they get the money?
Yeah, the money's coming pretty quickly. Okay. What I'm telling folks is, and what we try to emphasize with the banks, which is a bit of a stumbling point at first, is work with everybody. And the second thing is, for those businesses who didn't get in on the first tranche, we told them to work with the banks and be ready. And we told and begged, and we still are telling these banks, when this money opens up, which it should this coming week, for the next tranche, keep these applicants in your queue. Don't make them reapply needlessly. Have those applications ready so that money can turn around right away.
Okay.
There's some rules that they have to follow, and most of the businesses are aware.
Right.
But they get 100%. This loan will be forgiven if they bring back most of their workers. There's some prescribed time periods and allotments. But it's important because it keeps the business afloat, keeps the business operating. It also takes some of the pressure off the unemployment system. And as you know, those numbers have skyrocketed. And as part of the first CARES Act, obviously the federal government expanded and extended. We added an extra $600 per week for the unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
So as we look at this playing out into the future, it's hard to imagine that there won't have to be another tranche. It's hard to imagine, as the president had initially hoped, that there'll be some big bang and the economy will come roaring back.
Yeah.
I think, if anything, we underestimated just how devastating this virus was going to be to our country. It's something we can recover from, but we have to remember that this is a public health crisis first, before it's an economic crisis.
Well, give me the consensus in Congress. I know most of us want to open up the economy. We don't want to do it too fast. Are we looking at Georgia and using that as a roadmap as they open up and paying attention to that?
Oh, I'm sure people are, but I don't think you need to. I think you look at parts of Asia where they really, the cases, you know, the virus had run its course to an extent, due to physical distancing, but they're starting to see a couple distressing things. One is, as they start to open up, the cases start to inflate again. The cases start to increase again. And the very big concern from the World Health Organization analyzing what's happening in the rest of the world is, you know, there's no certainty that you won't get the virus again.
Right, the second wave. Yeah.
The second wave.
Yeah.
Now, you look back at 100 years, you know, that flu went through the human systems more than twice and came back stronger and more virulent. So we're facing a great unknown, a great danger. But And unfortunately, for the most part, the only thing that we can do is the technology of 100 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Stay apart, wash your hands, do what Mom said.
Right.
And I think we can still move forward staging the economy back into session. It's just going to be in a different manner. It's going to be smaller settings with greater physical distancing and an adaptation. But it's not going to be easy.
Congressman Mike Quigley on the phone with us for a few more minutes. Do you see a tiered program? I had the mayor of Naperville on this week, and he said Naperville will be ready in a few days. We are ready to go. I know the mayor of Peoria, Jim Artis. I grew up with the Artis family. Peoria is ready to open up. I know the mayor of Rockford. I lived in Rockford for years. Tom McNamara and I have been texting this week. Tom said to me, I'm not ready. So are we going to start seeing county by county open up, city by city, slowly?
Look, the bottom line is this has to be regional. You know, if a city doesn't have walls around it, it can't isolate, just as a country can't. What you're starting to see is the governors get together and say, we're going to plan to reopen the economy on a regional basis. You know, the folks in Northwest Indiana and Chicago and Southeast Wisconsin, that's all one economy. Political boundaries be damned. So if a city thinks it can control who's coming in and out, you know, it's not 1918. People get on planes, people mm-hmm. travel, and you're creating a great risk. If we're going to reopen, this has to be about testing, 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 and protecting the most vulnerable. You know, I think there's people out there who are 25 and think, I'm young, I'm healthy, it won't bother me. Well, first of all, good luck with that. Second, you might very well be a person who spreads it to those who are more vulnerable.
Could be carrying it.
Sure, a person of color with greater morbidity, background illnesses, hypertension and high blood pressure and so forth, diabetes, respiratory problems, nursing homes. So it's pretty selfish to think that, you know, you can go and do this. There's a way to do this. It's on a regional basis. It's involving protecting our most vulnerable,
right.
Testing and tracing. It's not a simple solution, and it's a little scary to think people can be so far ahead of this.
We have a presidential election coming up in the fall. People are talking about, and we had Dr. Nzike on last week, and she brought this up. I asked her this question, are you worried about a second wave this fall? And she said, we could see a second wave, plus with the flu, it could get kind of dangerous. The presidential election, how do you see that playing out? Mail-in ballots? Are people still going to be able to go to the polls? I know you want people to vote in advance. How do you see it playing out?
Well, I'd like to see a uniform system nationally where people have those options. At the very least, the option to mail, as we've had in some states, it's almost exclusively what they do. We're meeting some resistance on that. If we're going to do that, one of the things we have to do is prop up the post office, which must be part of the next tranche of protection. That system may very well go under. It will run out of money in September, most recent estimates. And then again, for those who say, well, I'm fine, I don't need to do the mail. Let's remember the people who do the poll watching, the poll working. They have, you know, as we saw in Wisconsin, which was just a mess,
mm-hmm.
they have hundreds and hundreds of people coming through there every single day. It's hard to imagine that we'll go back to complete normalcy, including elections, until after there's a vaccine.
Right. I agree.
And so we just have to be prepared for all those contingencies. States have done early voting, mail voting, for a long period of time now. It's worked effectively. We ought to do it on a uniform basis.
Or they keep the polls open for an entire week. I know we encourage people to go in advance, but people love to wait until that Tuesday in November when it's ready to vote. But you're right. Yeah. Encourage people to go early. Congressman, we appreciate your time. Glad you're safe. And thank you for passing this bill for these small businesses, because we all know at least two dozen that we frequent on a regular basis, including restaurants and bars. And And, you know, I was talking to the mayor about the dry cleaners. She said the dry cleaners are open in the city. My dry cleaners has been closed. I wonder what's going on there. I hope they didn't go out of business. So you worry about these businesses.
Sure. I think I look forward to seeing everybody is sitting down at Ann Sather's, D'Agostino's, Superdog.
Yeah.
You name the place. There's so many great treasures in Chicago we need to get back to.
Right. Thank you, Congressman. Have a great Sunday.
You too. Take care.
That is Congressman Mike Quigley. They voted on Friday the stimulus 3.5, and money is going to go into the hands of these small business owners.